The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
Yesterday, I gave a talk on Hweka, the second ancestor, and that very important story example in our tradition of a seeker of the path. And I was reflecting on that afterwards. I was thinking about Udo's talk where he was talking about lay practice and the challenges, thinking about how the Buddha recognized in his time that amongst the fourfold sangha of lay and monastic practitioners, that everyone has Buddha nature, everyone has the capacity to hear the Dharma, to practice it, and to realize it. He, at the same time, recognized that lay students generally have many responsibilities, many concerns, that many areas in which you have to dedicate your time and your energy and your mental focus and your everything. And when we think about Seishin and how we really shift the schedule to really wait, most significantly our zazen, we're in silence, we're not having conversations, we're letting go of our normal responsibilities. Residents don't entirely do that, but the work period is much reduced. And how that allows us to really, in a very powerful way, let a lot of the turning of our lives and of the world fall away, in a sense, step back a bit, so that we can not just develop our zazen, not just go deeply into our zazen, but actually have encounters within ourselves that are touching the, in a sense, the life force of what a spiritual practice is. And Shoan mentioned something in her talk about how, you know, about her being moved by small things that she sees happening. And I was thinking about in my early years before I moved here, I would come for a Sunday morning like this, and oftentimes I would go home and think about one moment where my teacher said something, or something happened in a service. I heard a line in the sutra, or we did a memorial service, and something that my teacher's poem, something would happen where I would feel pierced in a good way, and touched in a way that was not wholly unfamiliar, but was not familiar enough. And that would be, that one moment would sort of, it would be like I'd had a whole meal, but I couldn't tell you exactly what I'd had. And the way those moments, that something is happening, something is being touched, something is turning, there's a kind of an affinity, a resonance, which is being met and acknowledged. And, you know, it's like when you're traveling in a country that's unfamiliar to you and no one speaks your language, and it's such a struggle to communicate even simple things. And then you bump into somebody who speaks your language and it's like, oh, there's that just feeling of relaxation. It's like, oh, we can meet, and it's not so hard. And so I was thinking about all of that after yesterday's talk, because that example of Hweka is such a, you know, I mean, he cuts off his arm for God's sake, right? So what are you going to do? Right? What am I going to do? What are we going to do? So I was thinking, so how to, you know, Da Wei, the Chinese master Da Wei, had a lot of lay students, and there are collections of his teachers. There's a book that I think is unpublished at this point called Swampland Flowers, where a lot of those letters are collected, and he talked to a lot of students who were, you know, ministers and government officials and so on, who had busy lives. And he talked about how to stay within the Dharma. He said, take the question of life and death and paste it to the end of your nose, right? So that you always see it. And so I wanted to look at this koan this morning to sort of address that. So from within the world, wherever we find ourselves, and all of the things that are demanding our attention, and that can seem so easily be taking us away, taking us away, taking us away. How do I find my way back? Right? And if it only is happening in those moments of zazen, or when you're doing liturgy, or when you come for session, there's something happening in those moments of zazen and liturgy and session, but they're big, big spaces, big gaps that we just fall into and tumble. So this is from the Book of Serenity, the pointer. Having shed illusion and enlightenment, having cut off holy and ordinary, although there are not so many things, setting up host and guest and distinguishing noble and mean is a special house. It's not that there is no giving jobs on assessment of ability, but how do you understand siblings with the same breath, adjoining branches? In the main case, as Yunyan one day was sweeping the ground, Dao Wu said, too busy. Yunyan said, you should know there's one who isn't busy. And Dao Wu said, if so, then there's a second moon. Yunyan held up the broom and said, which moon is this? And Hong Zhuang's verse. Borrowing temporarily, Yunyan comprehends the gateway. Realizing the function as is appropriate, Dao Wu then rests. The snake handler on elephant bone crag. The doings of childhood seem shameful when you're old. What is delusion? What is enlightenment? We say that delusion is not seeing what's real. It's being obstructed, being held back. That enlightenment is illuminating what is hidden, is seeing things as they are. Simple words, but not so simple to see directly. Again and again, the teachings tell us that all of our attachments are based on false, though compelling, views and beliefs, desires, and that in those we attribute things and people and ourselves with a sense of independence and autonomy, a sovereignty, a nation unto ourselves, self-existing, that things exist objectively, we just see them, that our mind is not creating, we don't see our projections. And so here in the pointer, he says, having shed illusion and enlightenment, cutting off holy and ordinary, setting up host and guest and distinguishing noble and mean is a special house. And this is the house of Buddha Dharma, house of the middle way. You know, the middle way is such a, it sounds so simple. Oh, it's the middle way, right? Just stand in the middle, balance it out. Half of this and half of that. Would that it were that simple. The middle way is a revolution. It's radical. So radical that we can't really bring anything from home to it. The special house is the house in which we become free of host and guest, noble and mean, realize in actuality there are not so many things. Right? Samsara is a very, very complicated place to live. I mean, just think about what's going on in Afghanistan. Explain it. Right? What is happening there right now? How did this come to be? Well, there are lots of explanations, and good ones. insights, historical perspectives, understandings. But does any of that capture all of it? Can any explanation explain adequately what is happening there today? Can it convey the pain, the fear? I was watching this morning a clip that the New York Times did of three young Afghani women, a boxer, a singer, and somebody who works for a news media. And they were all talking about how it may be that their lives are over, but they're saying, no, my life is not over. I have a dream. I don't want somebody to take that dream away. It's both awe-inspiring and gut-wrenching. Who has the power, right, to steal a people's life away from them? We do. We have that power. When there are too many things, when host and guests are not understood, when noble and mean are infused with greed, anger, and delusion. We have too much power within our delusion. So we enter into the Dharma practice, and it seems simple enough. Just let go. Okay, you got it. Just see what's in front of you, right? Don't add anything extra. Just be kind. And then we realize, well, evidently not quite so simple. And we see how we turn worlds into realities that then we bring to the world. And then we do that with the Dharma, right? The Dharma becomes another thing. Why would it not? Why would it be different? Why would we see it differently than we see everything else? Zazen becomes a method. Enlightenment becomes something to attain. Delusion becomes something to extricate. Your negative behaviors or thinking become something to extinguish. Right? We just use all the same artillery, all the same equipment. We just pull the same stuff out of the same warehouse. Vimalakirti said in the Vimalakirti Sutra, the Dharma is not an object. It's free of acceptance or rejections. It's not a secure refuge. It's not a safe place, actually, he's saying. Not safe in the way we dream it to be. It's without characteristics. It's not a community. It's not a sight or a sound or a category, an idea. And then if we're still standing, he says this, if you're truly interested in the Dharma, take no interest in anything. In the footnote to that, Robert Thurman says, this is his expounding of the essence of the Buddhist tradition. Now, of course, it is so easy to misunderstand that. That may already be happening right here. And so whenever we hear the teachings in such a way that seems to be destructive of life, of causing harm, of not bringing forth good, we should stop and consider, am I hearing this correctly? But what he says is true, quite true, more true than we might want to allow. But the simple fact is that the more we free ourselves of attachments, the less suffering we experience. It's not that complicated. The Buddha said, if we want to stop suffering, we have to stop creating it. And right there is the rub, right? Because we have become quite proficient at creating it, more than we imagine. And not just doing that within ourselves, but doing that together. And doing that with all kinds of rational, good reason, often backed by. And so we observe, the greater the distance, the easier it is to objectify, to diminish, to judge, to harm. That's always the basis of violence, of hatred. But it's so simple in a way. I mean, think about the last few days, the earlier days of this week. It was a little warm, a little humid, right? Particularly for those of us here in the Zendo, right? And particularly the more we were here in the Zendo, because we're all generating heat. And so it got warmer as we sat, period after period. And because we're concentrating, it gets even warmer, right? We could probably measure it. Like if, you know, for one day, it's like, don't concentrate, just be distracted, right? Then it's just bodily heat. The next day, concentrate. Now it's not just, but it's like key, right? So when it gets hotter and hotter, that should be a good sign. You know, oh, we're really working. But that heat, right? And just, it's just heat, right? Nobody's in trouble. Nobody's in danger. We actually have nice fans, but it's hot. It's also summer, by the way. We shouldn't be surprised. But in that heat, what was happening in your little portion of the planet, right? Were you enjoying that heat? Were you hating that heat? Were you wishing that heat would go away? Were you wondering why you were here? Were you wondering, why did I come to an August session? What were you wondering? And yet, the more we think about that, particularly if we direct it towards the apparent sense of our misery, which is the heat, what happened? Oh, it gets hotter. Right? We could probably measure it. Distance. Objectify. Creating a world. And putting on top of a world. And then the long-awaited day came. It blew out. The temperature dropped, got a little cooler. And how quickly we forgot the agony of yesterday. The day before, it was everything. It was forever. And then easy come, easy go. Not a second thought. The mind is a fickle thing. That's why the Buddha said, when we rely on that for our peace, there's only moments of peace between periods of battle. The Buddha said, the world may quarrel with me. The world may quarrel with me. That is the world. Guest and host is a teaching of Master Lin Ji. Typically, usually the host represents the absolute, the ultimate. Guest is the relative. Setting up guest and host, distinguishing noble and mean, entering into the world. The world may quarrel with me. There are people, differences of opinions, who don't like what he's teaching, who are competing, who feel threatened. The world is filled with strangers. But the Buddha said, I do not quarrel with the world. Host. There are not so many things here. The skandhas are empty of self. No one here is a stranger. The world may quarrel with me, but I do not quarrel with the world. That he's not saying he just kept his mouth shut. He's saying there is a world where there is no quarreling. And so here, Yunyan, Dao Wu and Yunyan were Dharma brothers. They studied together with Yao Shan, so they knew each other well. They practiced together. It's a particular kind of relationship, right, that we build with practitioners. We practice together, particularly if you practice over years and have a lot of contact. Of course, residents, monastics, teacher and student, you know, are forging a very particular kind of relationship, a training relationship, relationship that's not like other things, right? Because we meet in the Dharma. We might meet in other ways, but that's really the thing that keeps bringing us together. It's different. It's special. It's a special house. That doesn't mean it's better or different. You know, it's not a matter of high or low. It's special in that what it gives us an opportunity to do. And so here, Yunyan and Dao Wu, Yunyan is sweeping the ground, and Dao Wu says, too busy. too busy. Yunyan says, you should know, there is one who isn't busy. Too busy, he says, too crowded, too many things, too much activity. And it's a crowd, in a crowd it's easy to get lost. Yunyan was known for living in a hermitage in the woods, and he had a couple of wild lions that were friends, and they hung out, and he would feed them, and people would come to visit him and freak out, and he would say, it's okay. And one day, Yunyan was asked by Guishan, I've heard that you used to have tamed lions, is that so? And Yunyan said, yes. Guishan said, were they always under your control or just sometimes? And Yunyan said, when I wanted them under control, they were under control. When I wanted to let them loose, they ran loose. Guishan said, when they ran loose, where were they? Yunyan said, they're loose, they're loose. He wasn't saying that they were distracted. He was saying sometimes he held them close and sometimes he let them run. All within a state of busyness, a state of not being busy. And so he says, too busy, Yunyan said, you should know there's one who isn't busy. I was thinking about, I was remembering when I was a teenager, probably about 17, I was living on a farm in a northern part of Georgia with my brother and a family. And we were working one day, my brother and I and Clell Kinney, who was a farmer. And we were out picking up all of these bales of hay. It was about this time of year. And we had to bring them in. We put them on a big flatbed trailer and bringing them over to the barn, toss them up into the hayloft. And we piled up this huge mountain of hay. It was a hot, hot summer day. And we're standing on top of this mountain of hay, tossing them into hayloft, which was great because the hayloft was, you know, second floor is right there. So we're just, boop, just tossing them in. But as we kept working, the mountain was getting smaller, right? So I was young and pretty fit and running around, working up a good sweat, tossing and tossing and tossing. And halfway through, I was completely worn out. I mean, I could barely pick up the bales. My arms were shaking, right? And I looked at Clell, who was probably in his early 40s, not a big guy by any means, not like buff and just a very normal looking. And he was just, well, I'm running around, you know, boom, boom, boom. He's just tossing the bales up, right? Just tossing the bales up. And I'm like struggling to keep up with this man, right? And I thought of that because someone was way too busy. You should know there's someone who isn't busy. What does this mean? So we could think of this as, you know, when we practice caretaking, we practice working samadhi. That while we're working in one place, doing one thing, we're in one place, doing one thing. It seems simple, right? No, it's not. We see that it's actually very difficult to do that. We see that habitually, our mind has worked is distracted. And so it is not used to actually being under that kind of control, which is not an aggressive, forceful thing. It's just tamed. It knows where it needs to be, and it can be there. And in that one moment, that one activity opens up. At a distance, it looks small and not very interesting and something that just has to be done. The closer we come, something happens. It's like, in order to receive the Dharma, we have to give permission. When a student enters the Doksan room for the first time after Tonkara, they do 9 bows and asks for permission. There's something that is supposed to be going on there again and again and again. Surrendering, opening the door wide. So that where there is affinity, that affinity can be met in that way that pierces us all the way down. That changes something. Right? We imagine we've all had moments, simple moments, no one else noticed. They came and went, but for you, it was a changing moment. Something shifted, something opened up, something was felt. You may not have understood it. Maybe it wasn't important for you to understand it. But on some level, we know that this is true. There is something about this that is true. What does that mean? And so within that practice of mindfulness, that door begins to open. And when we are touched deeply, it's because the door is open wide. When we are touched by very simple things, ordinary things, that most others might be missing, it's because the permission is large. And in a sense, you could say that's what we're cultivating all the time. Making ourselves that open, that receptive, that eager, that hungry, that here. And so, understanding there is one who isn't busy, we could begin to understand it in terms of entering into one moment where there is nothing else, there is nowhere else. There are not so many things here. That's why Vimalakirti says, right here, this is not an object. It is free of acceptance and rejection. It's not a secure refuge. It's not a place to dwell. It's not a place to stake out. It's not a method. It's not a place that you can seize and return to at will. It's none of those things. And because none of those things were in your mind, the moment before you were pierced, you were pierced. The moment after that, when we try and take ownership, that opening whoosh, closes up. We should notice that. Generally, because we can be a little thick-headed, we have to experience that over and over before we cease trying to seize it. And so you should know there's one who isn't busy, and Dao Wu said, if so, then there's a second moon. And the footnote says, only one? Or two? There's hundreds, thousands, myriads. And in a sense, once we begin, make the slightest distinction, heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. Not just heaven and earth, but everything, everybody. That's the place where the guest lives. That's the place where the host lives. The special house is when those are not in conflict. And so the profound teaching of the middle way is that everywhere you are, it is. Buddha nature pervades the whole universe. And so we come to a monastery, we go to our seat to practice, because that avails us of a particular opportunity, in a sense, because we have divided this special house. But even when we realize it's just one house, it's still valuable. But being divided, okay, very well. Can we practice within the many things where there are so many concerns, moving amidst and intermingling without distinction? That's what's happening in Zazen. When something arises and you don't name it, you don't judge it, you don't declare it high or low, you don't define it good or bad, but you just see it, that is stepping into the special house. That is experiencing not so many things. That is not dividing, not distancing. And the commentary says, good people, as you eat and make your tea and sew and sweep, you should recognize the one who is not busy. Then you'll realize the union of mundane reality and enlightened reality. In the Dongshan lineage, this is called simultaneous inclusion, naturally, not wasting any time. It's interesting that, you know, we think that when things are so complicated and there's so much going on, it's like a room where there's a lot of going on, and you think there must be something really interesting going on in here. And you walk in and realize, oh, it's just a whole bunch of confusion. Right? And when you walk by a room and there's nothing in there, there's like one flower or a fly on the window. You think, nothing here. Nothing here worth investigating. And what the Dharma is inviting us into is in that realm of not so many things, which is everywhere we go, the world becomes simultaneously inclusive. Then we naturally do not want to waste time. Things become more precious, more important. The taste for samsara begins to fade. Actually, you know, for a long time it's a struggle because we want it. But, you know, we want to let go, but we want it, right? But we're supposed to be practicing, but we want it, right? And every time we go back to feed from that, drink from that water, we actually, you get a sip, right? You get a little taste. And it's fleeting, but it tastes good. You know, it's like fast food. Like they figured out how to feed you nothing and make it taste really good. Brilliant. Right? And it's hard to trust. Why should I give that up? For the breath? I mean, you got anything more? Can you put anything more on this side of the scale? I mean, there's so much going on over here. And that's why dukkha kind of helps us out a bit, doesn't it? Right? Because it's not just pleasurable. It's actually quite, quite painful. If we will allow ourselves to know it. If we will allow ourselves to feel that pain. You know, while I was watching that clip this morning, all the way through it, I'm just going, oh, oh. Listen to these beautiful, beautiful young people who want what every person wants, a life, a passion, a fair chance. Not asking for that much. Who has the right to take that away? In a just world, that would not happen. In a world of fairness, that would not happen. And while there is judgment, justice and fairness in our world, there is much injustice and unfairness. And that's one reason we're going to study karma, this anga, to really understand, how do we understand this? How do we make sense of it? Bodhidharma said, when you face adversity, don't be surprised. When you face madness, when you face that kind of injustice, that kind of inequality where a small group of people can have such influence and steal the lives away, and it'd be so unjust, and yet, when we look deeply within ourselves and understand karma, it actually does make sense. That doesn't mean it's good or right, but it helps us to understand how we are we. And to understand that is to understand, how do we untie this knot? How do we actually, what is compassion, for crying out loud? It sounds good, it sounds simple, until you try, until you actually pick up that knot. And you can start with a small one and you'll see how complex it is. If so, then there's a second moon, and Yunyan holds up the broom and says, which moon is this? You just have to love him. Indeed, which moon is this? Is this the one that's busy or the one that's not busy? There is one who's too hot. There is one who is suffering too much. And Yunyan says, you should know there is one who is not hot, one who is not suffering. Right then, right there. And it is so easy to misunderstand that. The easiest thing to do is to hear that as an invalidation, a negation of a person's experience. It has never been that in all of the 2,500 plus years of Buddha Dharma. In fact, there are robust, vigorous, ongoing efforts to counter that false understanding, recognizing how dangerous that is. In a very real sense, Buddhism does not negate anything. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no realm of sight, no realm of consciousness, no old age and death. All of that is a great radiant affirmation in which there is no object, in which everything is free of acceptance and rejection, in which nothing is a place where you can claim as yours and keep others out, in which there is no sight, sound, category, idea, in which finally we can freely not take an interest in anything, and now finally everything matters. And we have to see this for ourselves, right? Else we get tangled up in the language and the confusion and the misunderstanding. We have to understand that when we let go of something, everything remains except that bit of suffering. Which moon is this? Dao Wu says. In the Oxerting pictures, about midway through the path, the poem says, "I seize the ox with a terrific struggle." The ox is you, by the way. The self. "I seize the ox with a terrific struggle. Its great will and power are inexhaustible. The whip and rope are necessary, else it might stray off down some dusty road." Right? These are the practices, the disciplines, the sitting still, the simple act of sitting still, of reclaiming our natural stillness. The simple act, our birthright of silence, which at every turn would be robbed of you and us, the incessant noise, at great peril, I might add. And so these are the whips and ropes, right? Showing up on time, washing the dishes on meal crew, getting along, working out our disagreements, practicing the precepts, else we might stray off down some dusty road. In time, however, becoming more and more trained, the ox becomes naturally gentle. Naturally gentle. In other words, it reclaims that gentleness, that tenderness that it's always had, that's always been there. "Slowly now I return homeward. Reaching home, I am serene. The ox too can rest. The self can rest. It's not banished, not vanquished, not extinguished. Now it's understood. Now it's seen. Its great will and power are now for the benefit of others. It, in blissful repose, I have abandoned the whips and ropes. They're no longer necessary." What Yunnan is trying to help us to see is that this is the special house. It contains the whole. Not by choice, not because the Buddha said so, but because that's its nature. And that is true of every living thing, like this. And when we really understand that, or even just have faith in that, then you empower. You empower a broom. You empower sweeping. You empower what awaits you at home. You empower the challenges, because they're occurring within this special house, where illusion and enlightenment, holy and sacred, are both present. but not binding. Present, naturally so. Simultaneously, inclusion. And so now the bodhisattva's path is not to waste time as though we would live forever, as though others' suffering can wait. And we can do that peacefully. Now, that is the great aspiration. So when we find ourselves not entirely peaceful, not quite yet serene, in a house in which holy and ordinary seem to be at odds, just remember, not two. How many moons is this? How many minds do you have? Not so many things here. Dogen says in Inmo, the body already is not us. Life is moved through days and months and is hard to stop, even for a little while. When we try to ask where our youth is gone, there are no traces. When we look carefully, we see that there are many things from the past which we cannot meet for a second time. The red heart does not stop. It comes and goes piece by piece. He's invoking, calling us to observe and reflect on impermanence, to contemplate time swiftly passing by. Life and death are of supreme importance. Opportunities are lost. And to bring forth, bodhicitta, bring forth the great aspiration, to appreciate this life that we've been given and the times and challenges that we are in, which are overwhelming, right? When we stop and look and contemplate, they're overwhelming. I am frequently overwhelmed. I am frequently stopped. This, really? And then I remember this. You have a path, I have a path. You have a practice, I have a practice. You have self-nature, everything is included. Everyone has self-nature, everything is included. A vow is a living thing. A vow is a living thing. Though clear waters range to the vast blue autumn sky, how can they compare with the hazy moon on a summer night? Most people want to have pure clarity, but sweep as you will, you cannot empty the mind. This is not because the practice is not sufficient. It's because the mind does not need to be emptied in that way. We do not need to cut out that part, exclude that side. We are in a special house. We call it Buddha Dharma. Everyone is, by the way. And so that's why it's important, I think, that we each day bring forth the great aspiration, the four measurables, the aspiration for your own enlightenment, the dedication to be of service in this world, to say it. Say those words and mean them when you say them. And if they feel far away, say them far away until they come closer. And understand that the power of those words is not in the words. It's in your mind, it's in your heart, and it's in what happens today. And that is a force that I believe we may never fully understand. But the one worthy thing to do in this life is to see how far into it we can go, how deeply we can understand and live it. So, may we
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.